People are treating Google like their most trusted friend. Should they be?
Well, I think judgment matters.
Eric Schmidt is Google's CEO.
If you have something that you don't want anyone to know, maybe you shouldn't be doing it in the first place. But if you really need that kind of privacy, the reality is that search engines, including Google, do retain this information for some time. And it's important, for example, that we are all subject in the United States to the Patriot Act. It is possible that that information could be made available to the authorities.
So they very rapidly started to branch out into other areas. They were getting a lot of information from people using the search engine, but if people went directly to a website, that's bad, because now Google doesn't know that. So they developed a browser, which is now the most widely used browser in the world, Chrome. By getting people to use Chrome, they were able now to collect information about every single website you visited, whether or not you were using their search engine. But of course, even that's not enough, right? Because people do a lot of things now on their mobile devices, on their computers, without using their browser. You want to know what people are doing even when they're not online. So Google developed an operating system, which is called Android, which on mobile devices is the dominant operating system. And Android records what we're doing even when we are not online. As soon as you connect to the internet, Android uploads to Google a complete history of where you've been that day, among many other things. It's a progression of surveillance that Google has been engaged in since the beginning. When Google develops another tool for us to use, they're doing it not to make our lives easier. They're doing it to get another source of information about us.
These are all free services, but obviously they're not, because huge, complicated machines aren't free. Your interaction with them is governed so that it will generate revenue.
And that's what Google Docs is, and that's what Google Maps is, and literally now more than 100 different platforms that Google controls. Companies that use the surveillance business model, the two biggest being Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you. We are the product.
Hey. Here we are. We're going to finish up this Google talk. We're in part two. Part one, you heard a lot of crying about Ariana Grande, and we talked about YouTube shutting down conspiracy videos and the big agenda to control thought, speech, information. Talked about the puppets of YouTube like Shane Dawson, Jake Ryan, Jake Paul, whatever his dumb name is. And then a little bit about Patreon, SESTA, FOSTA, censorship. Basically all the Illuminati things associated here, right? So today, we're going to finish it up. We're going to finish it right off. We're going to talk about Google, because you have to understand more about Google. I wrote a book about Google. Do you remember it? It was back in my early days when I was just a young conspiracy guy trying to enlighten many folks through the skill of writing. Now, I actually read through it's called... It's the wordiest title on the planet. Something about Google and the transhuman occult apocalypse. And I kind of breeze through it because it's a short book. Just a little mini book. Which I'm not plugging it right now. So don't rush out there and buy it. It's actually not my favorite. I was reading through it and I kind of thought, man, I had a pretty poor writing style, I feel. But, you know, people like it. I get a lot of good comments on it. So don't let me talk you out of buying it. but seriously, don't. I wrote that book, which is probably the beginning of my end, right? That's probably why I had such problems, because I don't know if you know this. I'll let you in on a little history. The website, IlluminatiWatcher.com, I had no previous experience with websites, SEO. In fact, when I started it, SEO wasn't even a term. Search engine optimization. It's this idea that you got to kind of do the right things on your website so you rank high on the Google PageRank system. The Google Nazis tell you how far up, because if you don't make it to the, because look, if you don't make it to the first page of Google, nobody sees you. If you don't make it to the top three, maybe they'll see you if you're on the first page past number three. And I stumbled right into a lot of key terms related to the Illuminati. I would be in the top three all the time. I was getting 500,000 page views a month in my heyday. And I should look up the dates. I wonder if when I released that book, if that's when it all went downhill. But on a good month, I'd get about 500,000 page views, which is phenomenal. And my web traffic went up on a linear path for about 3 or 4 years. I mean, every month it kept going up at the same rate, mind you. And if you're a data person, if you do statistics, mathematics, you look at that linear rise and you say, wow, this has got to top out at some point. And it did. It topped out and it was about 500,000 for about 3 months. And I thought, okay, well, shoot, that's a pretty good amount of traffic. But then that linear line started going down at the same exact rate for no apparent reason. Nothing changed. The formula did not change. I was writing a lot of articles back then and I couldn't keep the traffic. And I thought, well, this is very strange because the more articles I release, the more sort of like traffic I get. Because every other metric I had was increasing. Email subscribers, YouTube subscribers, followers on social media, everything was going up. But the traffic started going down. And long story short, a lot of crying. I went from 500,000 a month to now I get maybe 50,000 a month, 60,000 a month. And I know that's, I know I'm letting you guys in. I trust you though. I trust you so much that I'm letting you in on what goes on behind the scenes here. But the point I'm trying to make here is that something happened where I, as a conspiracy theorist or whatever you want to call me, I don't really like that term, but they started punishing me a few years ago and pushing me back a few pages. I've had people who stole my content rank higher, which is insane. I paid SEO guys to go through my website and try to fix stuff and nothing seems to work. I mean, there's still some articles that they'll show up in the top three, but not like it used to be. I mean, it was like Katy Perry, Illuminati, boom, number one. Lady Gaga, Illuminati, boom, number one. And now it's like you type in those phrases and it takes you to a CNN article debunking the Illuminati. And, you know, it's funny because they allow these other websites to rank high when they say stuff like, conspiracy theorists think that Lady Gaga is in the Illuminati. And then they go through their, like, they think because she does the symbols of the eyeballs that means something. And that's all they tell you. They tell you absolutely nothing. Meanwhile, I'm trying to like go through and say, okay, we already established that. Why is the symbol with the eye? Why is that happening? And I take you down a little further to try to understand why that is. I try to put a reason to it. Whereas these mainstream BuzzFeed crap websites, they don't do that, but they rank at the top of the list. How much sense does that make? Because Google is saying, look, we're going to apply this algorithm that determines the most accurate source of information to get people the answers they want. And that's what gives you the search results. Well, BuzzFeed isn't giving you the answers. Sway, you ain't got the answer, Sway. So that's why we're going to talk about Google today. Because I'm feeling vindictive right now. I'm feeling like talking trash on Google and then they're going to shut me down completely. feeling self-destruction. I'm feeling a bit like annihilation right now. I know this is dangerous territory for me. This does not come lightly, folks. Let me tell you. So first, I'm going to be very, very fair and balanced here, much like our good friends at Fox News, they would never lie to us or deceive us. You know who I like? And you're going to hate me after I say this. You know who I like to listen to for news? NPR. That is right. That's why I'm granola conspiracy number one. I like NPR. I mean, it's boring, but that's why, you know, it's got more truth to it. I mean, they got a liberal agenda for sure, right? Like, it's a bunch of like hippie yoga moms at the flea market giving you the news. But to me, they seem to be the most neutral sort of source. They're not sensationalizing. They're not fear-mongering. They're not trying to make something out of nothing, which is what you get with Fox News and CNN, MSNBC. You have the same. They are wrestling. They are trying to good guys and bad guys and whatever, right? Why was I talking to you about NPR? I don't even know. It's been a long day for me. Shout out to, oh man, Kaylee. Kaylee got a book on Etsy. First Etsy sale went down. I'm on Etsy. Etsy, Illuminati Watcher is the storefront. And I will be putting my other books on there. Right now I just have The Dark Path because that's the best book. I'm going to put the other ones on there too, though. So, anyways, I was talking to you about being fair and balanced. I'm going to give you the official story of Google, the history of Google as the official normie version. And then I'm also going to give you the version, I believe, how the CIA made Google. Ooh, very interesting, right? And we're going to do this all very quickly. Let's go. Now, the official story, you go to a website called internethistorypodcast.com is where I found this. Ironically, the top of the search results on Google's website for history of Google. And a lot of the stuff I found here was sort of corroborated by the other stories I've read. But look, I didn't read a book about this. Like, I didn't read a hardcover 500-page book about this. I just got some notes, listened to a few podcasts, you know. And here's the official version. Sergey Brin, I don't know how you pronounce his name. Sergey Brin and Larry Page, they were computer science nerds at Stanford University, the place where MK Ultra went down, right? Ted Kaczynski, Unabomber, got MK Ultra'd. I think that was at Stanford, wasn't it? No, that was on the East Coast, I think. Maybe it was Stanford. It doesn't matter. Brin, I'm looking through my notes here, so. Every now and then, my visionary stream of consciousness may interrupt us. So Brin, he was an immigrant from Moscow, curiously enough. And Larry Page was a nerd from Michigan. We'll call him, what are we going to name these guys? The Russian immigrant and the cold nerd. So very much like the division of labor between Steve Jobs and Wozniak. Cold nerd Page, he was the visionary introvert, not extrovert, but an introvert, and Russian immigrant Brin was a loudmouth. So Brin and Page, they went to a Montessori school. What is that, you may ask? If you're like me, you did not grow up with a silver spoon, you don't know what the hell that means. So I looked it up. I sure didn't know. It's a school where they harness traits to do something because it makes sense, not because some authority tells you to do that. I didn't know that existed. Must be for like rich white folks or something. But it's some kind of school where it's like the teacher will say, let's write a paper about this thing. And the students sort of like question it, you know, they don't just do it. They just say, well, okay, does this make sense? Should I write this paper? And don't ask me how the inner mechanics of that work. Like I said, I had to look it up. I didn't know what the hell that meant. But that's where these two guys went. And that's where the foundation is of saying, like, these guys were revolutionaries, man. They think outside the box. Oh, Brin and Page. Now, you got to go back in time to the 1990s. The 1990s, the internet was a gift from the technology gods. Why? Well, it gave everybody access to information for all kinds of research. That's how it all started. That's where the popularity started for scholarly research. You didn't have to go down to the library. You didn't have to go to the library and put in requests to get books from another library. It was all there. It was all there at your fingertips, all free. Knowledge is power, my friends. The Illuminati are now trying to take it back and control the power, as is evident with my last show where I talked to you about all this, Google and YouTube. Brandon Page, they admired how all this went to so much that they want to control what you learn. You know, they started out with the Montessori school stuff of questioning the official version of stuff, and now they want to tell you the official version, so the student becomes the master, right? So Page, Larry Page, cold nerd, he realized that the internet was built on links, which is very common knowledge now, right? But at the time, it was a bit revolutionary, apparently, to think that way. And he decided to analyze the structure of these links. Even more so, he would look at backlinks, meaning he would follow the sources back to the original source of the data that was referenced in all these other articles. Meaning there was an algorithm or formula to finding the original source, the legitimate source, looking at the fidelity of the information or the citation. And this idea was a project named Backrub. Now, in 1996, Backrub launched these spider bots, to find all these links online and rank them. And the ranking would tell you which page was the most valuable, which one gets cited the most. And that was where the term PageRank came from. And those of you that do SEO or run websites, you already know this, right? So it fueled the search engine to tell you which page had the most authority based on how many other pages linked to it as the original reference. Makes sense, right? Now, this search engine was built on a mathematical algorithm, which was recursive, meaning that the more data inputs to the formula, the better it was, which sounds a lot like artificial intelligence, by the way, which you're fueling through social media. You and I shouldn't say you. I also am guilty of this. Now, Page and Brin, they knew they could make some money from this. Because that's what the people at Stanford were doing, with Yahoo at the time. So they pitched the idea to some people about this whole idea of the PageRank and the back rub, and nobody was interested. So instead, they put it on the Stanford network for the general public to use as a free search engine. And guess what they called it? They called it Google, spelled G-O-O-G-O-L. Because that was, do you remember that Google used to be a term for a one with 100 zeros behind it? I remember that because I was a math nerd through high school and college. Math was my thing. That was my jam. And the first time I heard Google, the website, I thought of the number and I didn't really get it. But you'll see that when you look at the Google page, it'll have the G with all these O's. Anyways. So it gained popularity, right? And they moved from Stanford, which had a tiny amount of resources, into a full-blown startup, Google Inc. And they had to change the name to G-O-O-G-L-E at this point. And at this point, they pitched it to Andy Bechtolsheim, founder of Sun Microsystems. Do you like how slow I have to say that? Because you know I'd be butchering names. You know this. You know this about me, but I don't care. I care about the truth, and it doesn't matter how you pronounce his name. But Andy Bechtolsheim, he founded Sun Microsystems. And he made it rain on cold nerd and Russian immigrant. He cut 100 racks. Then got more funding from people like Jeff Bezos. That's right. So, now they're getting paid. And with all that money, they moved to a woman's garage named Susan Wojcicki's. Folks, I don't know what it is, but when I do this research, I get stuck with trying to pronounce the weirdest names to you. And you would think when I write these names down, I would say, look this one up or give it a listen. But nah, we ain't doing it like that. Not in 2019, we're not. So they moved to Susan Wojcicki's garage in Silicon Valley. Much like the TV show Silicon Valley on HBO, right? Now, side note, Susan's sister, Anne Wojcicki, married Sergey Brin, the Russian immigrant guy. And guess what they started? They started 23andMe. Oh my goodness. Do you know about 23andMe? Do you even DNA test, bro? They are trying to collect everyone's DNA so that 30 years from now, they can clone body parts and sell them back to you. They want to build the biggest database of biotechnology in the world. Ancestry.com, also very similar. They're owned by the Mormons, I think. They want to baptize all the dead people and maybe build a Noah's Ark of DNA people. I don't know what they're doing. Who knows what they're doing with this stuff? So Sergey Brin, quote, he says, "We're building a way to search human knowledge. Ultimately, I view Google as a way to augment your brain with the knowledge of the world." Very noble, sir. Very noble. Now, in this article, it goes through some interesting information. I say interesting, but it's really not that interesting. I'm going to boil it down to you. I was going to read you this paragraph, but half of you guys were going to fall asleep. Basically, Brin and Page found a way to get some more money and also maintain a majority share in the company. They, 12 to 25 million, and this is in 99, okay? And these venture capitalists, they took this deal, and they became members on Google's board of directors, while Brin and Page still ran the show, okay? Now, the corporate environment at Google moved along through the dot-com burst, and they built the infamous Googleplex. You've seen that. The employees seem very happy here with, employee-focused accoutrement. And then they had the phrase, don't be evil. Well, evil to who? That's a very subjective term. They would incorporate the mid-2000s. They would incorporate the pay-per-click stuff, which let advertisers pay to show up at the top of the search results. This is the system known today as AdWords, and this gives them clout such that in 2002, when Yahoo offered $3 billion to buy Google, they said, nah, they declined to sell it for $3 billion. Why do you think they did that? Why do you think they said, no, we're going to hold on to this? They trying to make $4 billion? Or is it a higher calling? So they went public in 2004, and America wins again. Also note that this was yet another immigrant that gave us a W in the win column there for USA, for all you xenophobes that want to shut all the immigration down. I don't know anything about immigration. I'm just messing with you. So the story is Page and Brin thinking outside the box, making tons of money. They want to maintain ownership. And as you heard in the quote, they view Google as a way to augment your brain with the knowledge of the world, which I don't disagree with. That seems to be the case, right? You can't have a conversation with someone without them trying to look it up on Google, right? Which is very disturbing when you think about this in the big picture of things. When people say, oh, let me Google that, like you're saying, I trust this system built by two guys to give me the truth, and I won't look any further into it. And, you know, me being on the other end of that is upsetting, because now if you want to know the quote unquote truth about Lady Gaga and the Illuminati, you're going to read a BuzzFeed article that's nonsense. It makes it sound like ghost stories, when in reality, the truth is on my website. Says me. What do I know? I'm trying to piece this puzzle together. But I can tell you that I've done far more research than BuzzFeed. Now, let's get into how the CIA made Google. This was an article written by this guy named Nafiz Ahmed. And the title is called How the CIA Made Google: Inside the Secret Network Behind Mass Surveillance, Endless War, and Skynet. No, I read this extremely long article. It's very long. It's very dry. It's very long. I don't recommend reading it, but like, if you're obsessed with this topic and you want to know more, or if you want to check my research, which I highly advise, because like I said, it's really long and I get distracted very easily. But I will attempt for you to distill out what's necessary. It's very possible I leave out some elements. Because look, this is how I'm trying to connect this dotted line without a 5-hour long conversation. Because you and I don't care enough that much. We already know what's happening here, right? We're just looking to confirm our own biases, confirm the Illuminati is doing bad things. Okay, so insurge intelligence. That's what Mr. Ahmed, I'm going to call him Ahmed. That's his last name, but it rolls off the tongue much nicer than Nafiz. Insurge Intelligence is a crowdfunded investigative journalism project, which broke the exclusive story of how the United States intelligence community funded, nurtured, and incubated Google as part of a drive to dominate the world through control of information. Seed funded by the NSA and CIA. Google was merely the first among a plethora of private sector startups co-opted by U.S. intelligence to retain information superiority. The origins of this ingenious strategy trace back to a secret Pentagon-sponsored group that for the last 2 decades has functioned as a bridge between the U.S. government and elites across business, industry, finance, corporate, and media sectors. Bang, 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 media sectors. What do you think that is? Now, the group has allowed some of the most powerful special interests in corporate America to systematically circumvent democratic accountability and the rule of law to influence government policies, as well as public opinion in the U.S. and around the world. The results have been catastrophic: NSA mass surveillance, a permanent state of global war, and a new initiative to transform the U.S. military into Skynet. Dun 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 dun. Bum 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 bum. Now, Skynet, of course, a reference to Terminator, if you weren't aware of that. Ahmed lays a foundation for this whole story, citing the Hebdo attacks and 9/11 as examples of how the government are trying to defend snooping by the NSA. They want to outlaw encryptions and defend these telecom partnerships that delete content that fuels hatred and violence in the name of safety is what they're doing, right? And Ahmed claims that there's a global information war and the intel communities are using technology to take power. He asserts that the war on terror is a war for intelligence. Now, I promise you I'm not going to read too much directly, but this came from it also. For the last 2 decades, U.S. foreign and intelligence strategies have resulted in a global war on terror consisting of prolonged military invasions in the Muslim world and comprehensive surveillance of civilian populations. These strategies have been incubated, if not dictated, by a secret network inside and beyond the Pentagon, established under the Clinton administration, consolidated under Bush, and firmly entrenched under Obama. The bipartisan network of mostly neoconservative ideologues sealed its dominion inside the U.S. DOD by the dawn of 2015 through the operation of an obscure corporate entity outside the Pentagon, but run by the Pentagon. In 1999, the CIA created its own venture capital investment firm, NQTEL, to fund promising startups that might create technologies useful for intelligence agencies. But the inspiration for NQTEL came earlier when the Pentagon set up its own private sector outfit. Now, do you remember many years ago, the PNAC, the Politics for a New American Century? It was a group of neoconservatives, and I think like Bill Kristol, I don't know, you know, these big names. And they released a document in the late 90s saying how they basically how they needed another Pearl Harbor to get into the Middle East to, you know, satisfy all these needs of these nutty people that are obsessed with power and taking over countries and stuff, right? That sounds very similar to this idea here. And what Ahmed reveals is a group called the Highlands Forum. It's the private group that acts as an intermediary between the Pentagon and American elites. Now, who do you think Ahmed is referring to when he calls them the American elites? It's got to be the Illuminati, right? Now, Ahmed proceeds to defend the idea that the Highlands Forum is basically the Illuminati. That's how I read it. Says they're embedded into intel, you know, the intelligence community, Pentagon, private industry, and how leaders of the group are also chairs at groups like DARPA. He lays out this these connections of all these high up people that float, what they call it, the rotating door, right? And he says the Highlands Forum influence on U.S. defense policy has thus operated through three main channels: sponsorship of the Secretary of Defense, which is in charge of main surveillance agencies. And he links us to DARPA. I told you I was going to save you a lot of time, a lot of reading. So basically he's saying that they're all connected, right? This Highland Forums group connects members of intelligence communities, private industry, corporate stuff, military industrial complex. And he says this group was part of the influence and policy to focus on information warfare through what some called the Pentagon Ideas Lab. He said if they found a way to bypass this open government law, which actually was made to forbid government officials from having closed-door consultations with people outside the government to develop policy. And look, and caveat here, I didn't see a lot about Ahmed's background. So like for those that are like 10 layers deep on conspiracy, like maybe this guy's a tool for some other group. I'm just throwing that out there real quick. But like, again, it always goes back to the smell test. Like, does this fit into the narrative of what's been going on? A little bit, right? Now, here's the big reveal. Who is this group? The elites. Who is the Illuminati? Are we going to find out right now? Are the words going to come out of my mouth of who's in the Illuminati? We've wondered this for so long. He writes in his article, the total participants in the DOD's Highlands Forum number over 1,000. Blah, 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 blah. Delegates have included senior personnel from SAIC, Booz Allen Hamilton, Rand Corporation, Cisco, Human Genome Sciences, eBay, PayPal, IBM, Google, Microsoft, AT&T, the BBC, Disney. Oh, Disney! General Electric, Enron, among innumerable others, Democrat and Republican members of Congress and Senate, senior executives from the U.S. energy industry, and key people involved in both sides of presidential campaigns. And then he goes on to name people at Washington Post, International Herald, New York Times, Newsweek, Daily Beast, Medium, blah, blah, blah. Which is curious because medium.com is where I found this article. So I don't know. Why did he call out their chief tech editor and then they proceed to publish it? So, you know, point for the two-layer deep conspiracy guy out there is like, yeah, but you don't know who Ahmed is. Maybe he's a tool. Maybe he is. I don't know. So the point of all this, how did Google get funded by the government? I said it on the first part of this show. The last episode, I guess it was. Was it? I don't know. My days are bleeding together. I feel like Marlon Brando from Apocalypse Now. The snail slides along the razor's edge. Anyways, so Google, funded by the government. Why do we say this? Well, from the article, Brin and Page had performed their work with funding from the Digital Library Initiative. What is that, you may ask? Well, it's a multi-agency program funded by the National Science Foundation, NASA, and DARPA. Okay, so there you go. It's pretty clear, right? Now, the article says that as they're developing this search engine that we talked about earlier, Sergey Brin, Russian immigrant guy, reported regularly and directly to two people who were not Stanford faculty, right? That's a big deal because he was at Stanford doing student things. And he reported to Dr. Bhavani Thurasingham. That's an easy one. Bhavani Thurasingham and Dr. Rick Steinheiser. Now, who were these guys? They were representatives of a sensitive U.S. intelligence community research program on information security and data mining. So Dr. Thurasingham, I'm just going to call him Dr. Thor. Dr. Thor, he worked as a U.S. contractor in the position of director of a massive digital data systems initiative. This was a project sponsored by the NSA and the CIA to foster research into IT, information technology. And they funded Stanford through the computer science department, which is where Brin and Page were, you know, hooked in. So these other private funding sources we hear about in the official story is just one part of the funding. Through these DARPA and CIA initiatives, like the Digital Library Initiative and the Massive Digital Data Systems Initiative, they also received funding. So the argument Ahmed has here is that the Intel community is actually plugged into and part of the Stanford Silicon Valley complex. Dr. Thor actually saw Ahmed's article, and he released a statement saying that Brin wasn't actually funded by the Intel community, it was Stanford. Which, like, isn't that the same diff, right? Isn't that what we're saying? Is that these initiatives funded Stanford, and then Stanford funded Brin, right? So to me, that doesn't hold a lot of weight. So Ahmed says he couldn't get... And let me clarify this. You're probably like, what the hell are you talking about? So he writes this whole report up, publishes it, and then he wrote like a sort of epilogue, which is just as damn long as the article, of what happened after he published, okay? Now, Ahmed says he couldn't get a comment from any of these ABC organizations or Google until he updated the article after Google's director of corporate communications wrote, quote, Sergey Brin was not part of the Query Flocks program at Stanford, nor were any of his projects funded by U.S. intelligence bodies. And Professor Ullman, who was one of the professors at Stanford's computer science department, said, I'm not going to dignify this nonsense. Burn, sick burn, bro. Now, Ahmed provided the abstract statement from the Massive Digital Data Systems Initiative. Boy, is that a mouthful. And I'm going to read it, and you be the judge here, right? The MDDS abstract says, they are to provide seed money to develop data management technologies which are of high risk and high payoff, including techniques for querying, browsing and filtering, transaction processing, accesses methods and indexing, metadata management and data modeling, and integrating heterogeneous databases as well as developing appropriate architectures. The ultimate vision of the program was to provide for the seamless access and fusion of massive amounts of data, information and knowledge in a heterogeneous real-time environment for use by the Pentagon, intelligence community, and potentially across government. What do you think? Does that sound like Google or not, right? Now, if you look at Stanford, they got a long history with this military-industrial complex like MKUltra, right? Ahmed says that Stanford also had a heuristic programming project for artificial intelligence. So this is back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s through DARPA. And recall the official story that we talked about earlier about the infamous private funding from Andy Bechtolsheim, the guy who founded Sun Microsystems. Well, Ahmed asserts that in 1998, Brin was briefing Intel representatives like Dr. Thor and Andreas Bechtolsheim. That's Andy. Sorry. I changed names on you there. He was briefing Bechtolsheim from Sun Microsystems, who was the official story version, the guy who actually funded it. But he was also briefing intelligence reps like Dr. Thor and David Sheraton, who are both connected into DARPA. Because Bechtolsheim went to Stanford, where he worked the Sun project, which was funded by DARPA and Stanford. And David Sheraton, he is a Stanford computer scientist professor who has his, in his bio, says he has supported DARPA for 20 years. So Ahmed lays out more details, including this statement. Throughout the 1990s, then, DARPA's funding to Stanford, including Google, was explicitly about developing technologies that could augment the Pentagon's military intelligence operations in war theaters. So what Ahmed is proving here is that Google was nurtured and financed by interests that were directly linked and inspired by the Intel community and this Highlands Forum. I mean, and to this day, there are senior positions that are tied into this Intel community. Ahmed lays it out. You can read it if you want to. If you want to fall asleep in front of your computer. No, it's not that bad. I'm giving him shit. But it's just long. It's just a lot. Now, Ahmed lays out an argument that the Pentagon already had a post 9/11 strategy to strengthen information warfare. And that is what gave us this total information awareness in 2003. TIA, we'll call it. Which is, again, another DARPA program. You look it up on Wiki and it says, and this is going to blow your mind. Hold on to your ass for this one. Based on the concept of predictive policing, TIA aimed to gather detailed information about individuals in order to anticipate and prevent crimes before they are committed. As part of the efforts to win the war on terror, the program searched for all sorts of personal information in the hunt for terrorists around the globe. Admiral John Poindexter referred to it as the Manhattan Project for Counterterrorism. According to Senator Ron Wyden, TIA was the biggest surveillance program in the history of the United States. And then they formally suspended this the same year it was funded. But some claim its framework is still in action at the NSA under a codename Basketball. And then later, a guy named Edward Snowden would prove it all to be true when he leaked the NSA PRISM stuff. Total information awareness. Isn't that something? Now, this was typical when we consider stuff like the Patriot Act and the NSA was getting surveillance done without court-approved warrants. Remember that? The Bush administration looked at the internet as a weapon system. And the point of the total information awareness, TIA, is that it was originally conceived by John Poindexter, who also attended the Highland Forum meetings, further proving Ahmed's links. Old Poindexter there, selling out his people. Now, Ahmed continues showing his 6 degrees of separation when he links the CIA to Facebook. Says the CIA of InQtel, remember them, that's the CIA venture group, they were on the same board as Axel, who gave Facebook $12.7 million in 2007. He says that Peter Thiel, that's the PayPal guy, right? He's PayPal, right? Isn't that him? Yeah, Peter Thiel. He was one of three board members on Facebook in 2008. And he also co-founded a defense contractor named Palantir, which, guess what they do? Data mining for the Intel community. Thiel was also meeting with Poindexter in 2004. This is a quote again from the article. In sum, the investment firm responsible for creating the billion-dollar fortunes of the tech sensations of the 21st century from Google to Facebook is intimately linked to the U.S. military intelligence community, with Venables, Lee, and Friedman either directly connected to the Pentagon Highlands Forum or to senior members of the forum. Well, what do you know, huh? Now, I'm gonna finish off with a lot of thoughts here, a lot of personal thoughts here, because I gave you a lot of info, and I want you to do what you want to do with it. What's the point here? Well, I told you some of the details of this document, and this is my opinion. Opinion. Underline that, right? These intelligence agencies, they set up these surveillance programs in order to more efficiently protect America from terrorism. I believe that. I believe these, you know, like when Trump shits on the FBI and the CIA, I don't condone that. I think the large majority of people out there are just trying to do right by their country. Cue the national anthem in the background. So now when I put on my conspiracy hat, though, you got to know that there's these groups have been infiltrated by the Illuminati, we'll call them, people who are looking to do nefarious things, which is where the tension lies, right? These intentions of the good guys, they may be fair, right? But the problem lies when they don't get public buy-in or transparency and they go rogue. To me, I'm a power to the people kind of guy. It should be up to us to decide if they want to trade privacy for safety. And let's also not talk about how actually safe this stuff truly makes us with all the, you know, if you've ever read like the TSA stuff about how effective they are at stopping people from getting through with weapons at the airport. But the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution prohibits unreasonable searches and seizures and requires search warrants passed by the courts. And if you want my opinion, I think private email might be more sensitive than letting the cops inside your own house. And you need a warrant for that. 2013, after hearing of Edward Snowden's leaked documents about the NSA collecting internet and phone records, a guy named Larry Klayman sued the federales and Facebook and Google and YouTube. And this is what it says, quote, "Secret and illegal government scheme to intercept vast quantities of domestic telephonic communications." It said that it violated the First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendments and even exceeds the Patriot Act statutes. This went up to a federal judge named Richard Leon, and he ruled that it violated the Fourth Amendment. So, look, it's not just me, right? Judge Leon compared it to the tale of 1984, called it almost Orwellian. He said, "I cannot imagine a more indiscriminate and arbitrary invasion than this systematic and high-tech collection and retention of personal data on virtually every single citizen for purposes of querying and analyzing it without prior judicial approval. Surely such a program infringes on that degree of privacy the founders enshrined in the Fourth Amendment." You could look that up. Larry Klayman, look it up. Now, the U.S. government, they were unable to cite a single instance in which analysis of this NSA bulk metadata actually stopped an imminent attack. Not one. At least that's what the article says. Except for maybe those NSA employees that were snooping on their lovers. Remember that? They were snooping on their girlfriend's whatever, Facebook chat or whatever they were doing. So to me, it seems like the official story is that Big Bro is done collecting our data. Nothing to worry about here, right? But much like MK Ultra, it's not until after they get caught that they say, "Oh, okay, well, we're done now. We won't do that anymore." I just have a hard time with it. And look, I'm a pro-America guy. I bleed red, white, and blue. In fact, I just got a letter from Uncle Sam. I got a Global War Terrorism Service Medal or something like that. I don't know. Because I was in the military. You know? I like this damn country. But I'm worried. I'm worried about people trying to infiltrate and take away some of these fundamental rights that we've got. I think there's some bad seeds out there, but I mean, for the most part, these ABCs, FBI, CIA, if you looked at it as a whole, it's probably a huge number. 99% of the people are doing the right thing for the right reasons. Trying to keep people safe from these maniacs out there, right? But the problem is when these corporate interests get involved, like this Highlands Forum. Corporate interests, there's never a good reason. It's always for money or power or control. And then we're left wondering, you know, is the mainstream media, are they cooking up these scary stories to get citizens overly frightened? Have us beg to strip our freedoms and protections for this supposed safety, which is a total illusion. You got to understand, we can't control everything. Big Bro can't save us from everything. They want you to believe you can be secure through their gentle guiding touch. Put your trust and your money into their hands. That's why they're dividing us and pushing these fear-based themes all over the place. That's why they got us worried about who's peeing out their front hole. Talked about that in the last episode, right? They want us to police ourselves. There's too many sheep, and they need the sheep to police themselves. They need us to be in fear of each other, so we look to them for protection. But guess what? That doesn't exist, right? Instead, you get privatized prison systems that lock up people that just have mental illnesses that need addressed, poor people, people in situations that, you know, shouldn't be in those situations. They go to these privatized prison industries, and then these assholes get rich, and these people become better criminals because that's what they learn in there, instead of learning reform and being better. Now, if you want more protection, it's going to come at a cost. You have to understand that. And it might be very inefficient. Meaning, like I said, maybe some data prevented some incidents, but it surely doesn't stop all of them. Look at all these mass shootings. You always see that afterwards, they'll be like, oh, he was all over his social media and, you know, all this stuff. And it's like, bro, like, what are they doing out of that bumble hive in Utah? The NSA's got this giant storage facility that records and monitors every piece of data being transferred on the internet. So it ain't stopping it, is it? And the fallout of all this happens when Google and YouTube decide it's okay to determine what stories or videos are safe for you to see. Will there be some hate videos out there circulating if they didn't do anything? Sure. Will some bad things happen because of that? Maybe. I'm certain there's nutty people out there that could be inspired by even nuttier voices. But do you really want Big Bro or Google or YouTube or Zuckerberg telling you what you can think? I don't. It always ties back to some shadowy financial interest, the Illuminati, right? Scared people asking for control of the world instead of taking on self-responsibility. I mean, look, you got to be okay with a small amount of danger. You want to live forever? My dad used to always say that. You want to live forever? I used to be scared of everything. I had tons of anxiety as a kid because you didn't know that. Makes sense, right? He always said, what, do you want to live forever? And I get it now. No, you don't want to live forever. Nobody should live forever. There'd be no beauty in life if you were immortal. That's like if you lived in if you moved to what's a great spot? Maui. Moved to Maui. That's a bad example. But you know what I'm saying, right? I don't need to explain it to you. You get it. And not to sound like an occultist or a Freemason, but without death, there cannot be life, right? Without the dark, there can't be light. That's what we saw in Bird Box, right? Did you hear my Bird Box analysis? She was afraid to be vulnerable and experience love and the full spectrum of life. And the reason we're here, she was afraid. Fear. Fear is the worst thing. So to sum this up, never use Google or YouTube again or their products or their email, and you'll be fine. Joke. I'm joking, of course. I don't know what the answer is. I know. I just know it's unacceptable, and no one is really talking about this abuse of power. I've been smacked a few times for crossing paths with Google and YouTube, as did Jordan Peterson. You know what they did to Jordan Peterson? They shut down his entire Gmail account without warning. They didn't even warn him. They just shut it down. All his emails lost. All his contacts gone. These free services are definitely not free. They come at a cost, right? And I talked about it in my Google Occult Apocalypse book. I got a quote for you to finish you off real good. In 2009, Google executive Eric Schmidt on CNBC said, "If you have something that you don't want anyone to know, maybe you shouldn't be doing it in the first place." And that's their mentality. This is very much like the themes of predictive programming when they openly tell us what's going on and they think, well, the onus is on us to make the right choices here. They think that exonerates them from being assholes if they tell us what they're doing. Harvard Law Review said, "This method of surveillance differs from eavesdropping in that the wearer is aware of it and may have consented, at least nominally, to its use." And that's what it is. That terms and agreements crap at the beginning of the app or whatever, we all scroll past it and we say, yeah, sounds good. Give it to me. But you got to know that's what you're trading. And they feel like they've got this moral high ground to do this. And what do you think about all this? What do you think? I want you to mull it over. Let me know what you think. Hit me on the socials. And look, I get the messages. A couple of these are mad at me because I'm not writing back. I read the messages, okay? I read them. I assure you I read them all. It might take me some time. And I might not respond. But I do appreciate it. I appreciate you listening. And I really appreciate you for leaving the reviews on iTunes. I really appreciate that a lot. So, and thanks for all the support. Thanks for keeping an open mind more than anything and staying engaged with these thoughts, because you're not going to get this kind of sort of mental exercise by watching another Avengers movie or whatever crap. What's this Masked Singer show? Which looks like a Rothschild dinner party gone bad. But we all need to face this reality of what's going on in our world. And I wish I could give the answer of what to do about it. I don't have that answer. I just want you to be armed with the knowledge of what's happening. As always, and most appropriately for today's show, stay woke.